We're holding on page Yud in Psachim, seven lines from the bottom, middle of Ois Chof Aleph. We were in the middle of learning about various kinds of things that a person doesn't see a simen bracha from certain kinds of work. First, we said a person doesn't see a simen bracha if he does work on Erev Shabbos or Erev Yom Tov or Matzah Shabbos or Matzah Yom Tov before making Havdalah or without making any kind of Tosfos Shabbos, whatever. Then we talked about where a person depends on little on the pittance that his wife brings in using kinds of work that are not really that are degrading to her and so forth. So now the Gemara mentions more on this topic. There are four prutas. So these people, the pashtus, make very little at a time, but even the pruta is the ein bahem simen bracha la'olam. There's never a simen bracha in these four things. They are schar koisvin. Number one, the pay that people get for writing sifrei Torah, tefillin, and mezuzahs, and we're going to talk about soon why there's no bracha in that. Schar meturgamanim. The second one is the pay of meturgamanim when a chacham, when a rosh yeshiva or a rav or whatever would be giving a drasha on Shabbos and Yom Tov. Then you'd have meturgamanim who stand over there and repeat what he says loudly for the tzibur. So then they get paid for it, but their pay, you know, there's not much of a simon bracha in it, as we're going to see. Mois yisoimim. The third one is money of yisoimim. When a person, for example, Rashi says, let's say, so the yisoimim are giving him assets of some kind, and he's investing them, or he's taking care of them, and the deal is he's going to split the profits with them. And the fourth one is Mois Aboimim, Dinasayam, money that comes from overseas, meaning where a person sends out ships to do international trade and bring home cargo. So there's a lot of danger always involved, that any a lot of different things could happen to the ships. So the Gemara says, Bishlema Schaim Togamonim. Let's go through three of the four of them, are easy enough to understand. That Marsha says, by the way, why we mention Davka Pruta. Now you have the expression, the famous expression, Kol Anoto Pruta Me'iyev Yit Misbarech, that Iyev had such a bracha on him that even during his good days, that is, that even a person received just a pruta from him, there would already be a bracha. And here we're saying vice versa, that even a pruta of this kind of money, there's no bracha. So the Gemara says, "Bishlema schar meturgamanim." I can understand why it is with the pay of meturgamanim. Bishum demechzi k'schar Shabbos. It appears like being paid for work on Shabbos. Now it's not because, strictly speaking, when do they do most of this job is on Shabbos and Yom Tov. Strictly speaking, it's not schar Shabbos because it's called in halacha bahavla. It includes that they also do it on weekdays and they get paid for that. So therefore, Shabbos is included as kind of a package deal. They have the same kind of thing. For example, when it comes to Balei Kriya, that the usual justification for paying Balei Kriya is that they take time before Shabbos to prepare the parasha, so therefore the laning is Bahavla. Nevertheless, it still appears like Schar Shabbos, and therefore there's less of a bracha in it. Mois Yisoimim Nami, then when it comes to investing or taking care of money of Yisoimim, you can say there's no bracha d'la b'nei mechila ninu. After all, the Yisoimim are little, they're not capable of being moichel. So you're taking a little more, the person in charge of managing their affairs is taking a little more than he should. So if it was an adult, maybe it would be a tiny amount and they're moichel on it. But the Yisoimim are not capable of doing that. So therefore, it comes out, in a certain sense, what he's taking is gezel. And that creates a lack of bracha. When he's bringing money in from overseas with international trade on ships, you could say there's no bracha mishum delab kol yoma v'yoma misrachish nisa. Not every day does a nest happen. So after all it takes is one shipwreck, and there goes all of his profits down the drain. So therefore, you can argue that it means that in the long run there's no simen bracha. And maybe also the idea is, even if there are nisim happening all the time, it's taking away from his schar in Olam Haba, and therefore that's they're menachem lo mischuyosav, and therefore that's also. El schar toisvin amai, what's the problem with the pay for soifrim? Why shouldn't they be able to make a decent living from it and have a bracha in their pay? So the reason is, she'imis ashru enam toisvin. Because if they become rich, they won't write. because we're assuming, as the Gemara is starting to assume over here, that they're doing it mainly in order to earn money. So like this, if they never become rich from it, they're constantly forced to continue at the job. So therefore, that makes that now there'll be plenty of Sifrei Torah and other Kisvei Kodesh available for people. But if they become rich, then they're gonna figure, so I don't need more money. What do I need to bother with the trouble of writing Sifrei Torah and so forth? And then there's gonna be a lot. Then there's not gonna be a lot for the tzibur. So in fact, Tanan Abanan, Chof Dalad Tanius, Yoshu Anshek Nesagdola, Al Kosvi Svarim Tfilin Mezuzis, the Anshek Nesagdola fasted 24 fasts regarding these Kosvi Svarim. Marsha points out it corresponds to the 24 Mishmaris, because the Anshe Mishmar also joined in these Tanesim. Another point is also there are 24 books of Tanakh, so that's another reason why for the 24. Shalo Yisashu, that they shouldn't become rich. Because as we just said, Shomola Yisashu, Enam Kosvin, if they become rich, then they're not going to bother to continue writing. Now Tosfos points out that this would be Taka Davka when they're writing them in order to sell them. So then we want that they shouldn't become too rich, because then they're not going to bother anymore. But when they but Tosfos says you have Sofrim who hire themselves out to Balabatim to write Sefer Torah. For example, you have nowadays a person commissions a Sefer Torah, so he hires a sofer to write that. The Anshek Nesagdola didn't ask that they shouldn't be able to make a living from it, because after all, such people may not be able to find very much opportunity to get such pay. So therefore, you don't want to discourage them from it altogether. In other words, seems to be the idea. So, but again, we're talking about where they're doing it. They're doing it in order to earn money, as opposed to, we're going to say at the end, if they do a lishma, then that's different. So Tanan Abanan, Kosvei Sforim Tfilin Mezuzis, Hain, they themselves, Betagurehen, and the merchants who buy from them. You have, for example, you think of a lot of times, you'll have individual sofrim sell their tefillin, parashiyos, and whatnot to retailers, who in turn sell them to wholesalers and so forth. The tagrehen, and so the merchants of their merchants, so the ones who are buying, all the ones who are involved in the supply chain of sifrei Torah, tefillin, mezuzos, v'chol ha'oskim and melechas shemayim, and everybody else who is involved in melechas shemayim. And the Gemara interjects that means la'asuya mochre tchelas, that comes to also include people who sell tchelas for tzitzis. All of them, enam roim simen bracha lo'olam, they're not going to see a simen bracha, because if they do, then they're going to say, I've earned enough money, I don't need it. V'im oskim l'shman, but if they're in this job l'shman, because they realize how important it is to supply Jews with sifrei Torah and tefillin and mezuzas and tchelas and so forth, roim, then they will see a simen bracha with it, because then there's no problem that they're going to stop doing it, because to begin with, they're not in it for the money, they're in it l'shem shamayim. So now the Gemara had started talking about. So now further on, after the Gemara deals with this whole matter of cases where a person is Einar Royas Simen Bracha. So again, the Mishnah had talked about the case where you have different, the fact that you have different places, they have different minhagim, whether they do Malacha Erev Pesach morning or whether they're also to. After, in the afternoon, we said it's universally also, but in the morning it's different minhagim. So that leads the Gemara into a discussion of minhagim in different places and when you have to respect those minhagim versus not. I once saw, actually, many years ago, I saw somebody made up a list, like a taxonomy of the different kinds of minhagim that are talked about in Sfarim. You have everything from, on the highest level, you have like minhag Yisrael Torahi. You have things like, for example, minhag Noshim, where there's a famous Rashba that says that you should always pay attention even to the minhag Noshim Skenus Shabbat Menu, because they have the Kabbalah about it. And other things like that. Then you have at the other extreme, you have things like minhag osius gehenim and minhag shtus. You have like a whole taxonomy of different minhagim, of different kinds of minhagim like that, where some of them the chachmei adoris have approved of, and others not. Anyway, so Bnei Beishan, the people of Beishan, the name of a city, Nohu, they have the minhag dolehavu asli mitzur letzidon b'male shabsa. They wouldn't travel from Tzur to Tzidon on Erev Shabbos. Tzur and Tzidon are both coastal cities on the coast of Eretz Yisrael. Nowadays, they're in Lebanon. Beishan was near Tzur. Now, the Gemara tells us in Shabbos, you're not allowed to go on a sea voyage within 3 days of Shabbos. for a couple of reasons that we learned about over there in Enyaakov. One being that it takes a few days for a person to get his sea legs, so you don't want it to be in discomfort on Shabbos. There's also the concern that there might be an emergency and you're going to have to break Shabbos, whatever it is. However, the Gemara says there, if it's just a day trip, like from Tzur to Tzidon, which is maybe an hour or two's boat ride, then you're allowed to on Erev Shabbos. These people of Beishan, now in Sidon, the market in Sidon, the big market over there, took place on Erev Shabbos. So therefore, it would be convenient if they could travel from Tzur or from the towns near Tzur, like Beishan, to Sidon and be able to buy things at bargains there on Erev Shabbos. But they had the minhag that they wouldn't. They had the minhag not to do that. Because this way it'll keep them from preparing for Shabbos. Also, b'nayu l'kamei Rabbi Yochanan. Eventually, the children of the people who had originally established the minhag, the next generation in Beishan, came to Rabbi Yochanan with a shayla. Omrulei, they told him, avosana efshelahu. Our fathers were able to manage with that. The economy was good then, so therefore they could manage without going to the fair in Sidon on Erev Shabbos. They could just go another day. Anan delo efshel on Mai. What about us? Where it's impossible for us, we need to be able to go there and get these bargains. Omalahu, so he tells them, Krav kibru aleim avisechem, your father has already accepted this minhag on you. Shenema, and the pasuk says, Shema b'ni musar avicha, my son, listen to the musar of your father, v'al titesh turas imecha, and don't abandon the turda of your mother. So therefore, that means that the minhagim, the turda, and even the minhagim that your fathers and your mothers set up, you have to respect those, and you have to continue keeping those. Marshav refers over here to something he says on this in Brachas, that the word Imecha is the same gematria as the word Yisrael, provided that you have a system of gematria where the langa letter, the end of letters, count as the hundreds. Usually, if you stop at Tuf, is 400, but there's a system in which langa Chof equals 500, and Shloss Mem 600, and langa Nun 700, and so forth, up to langa Tzadik is 900. So therefore, in that system, langa Chof is 500, the Aleph and Mem is 41, and that's the same gematria as Yisrael, so it represents the point that Imecha represents, or Avicha is Hashem, and Imecha represents the Jewish people. So Rabbi Yochanan tells them, in short, this is already an established minhag, and therefore you can't break it. Tosfos over here has a, that's not printed here in Enyaakov, but Tosfos has a long discussion about the ins and outs of that. Again, part of this taxonomy, part of this breakdown of different kinds of minhagim. When do we say that a minhag is absolutely unalterable and you can't change it, even when, like these Bnei Beishan, and they're having financial difficulties because of it, versus when are times when we say you could abrogate a minhag, or you could be makdu neder on it, or whatever. B'chlal, and in Hilchos Nedarim, it talks about, you know, a couple of days we're going to be doing Ataras Nedarim. You have in Shulchan Aruch, it mentions that a minhag, a minhag of a community, often has the status of a neder, and therefore, if you want to change your minhag, you would actually need Ataras Nedarim for it. So it's far from simple. Further on in the Perek, the Mishnah goes on to talk about different other kinds of minhagim, where again, in some places they have the minhag one way and in some places the other way. One of them is, the Mishnah mentions that they had different minhagim as far as eating roast meat on Pesach night, by the Seder. Some would do that as a zecher for the Korban Pesach. Others would dafka not do it so that it doesn't look like you're eating the Korban Pesach outside the Bais Mikdash. To this very day, it's a difference between Ashkenazim and Sfardim. We Ashkenazim have the minhag not to eat roast meat. Therefore, tackle even by the Zroya, we take off almost all the meat from it. On the other hand, many, many Sfardim do have the minhag davka to eat roast meat on Pesach night. So the Gemara mentions in this connection. So now the Mishnah mentions in this connection, one thing you definitely can't do, you can't eat a gdi makulos, which is a gdi means a goat, so it would be a young goat or a young sheep, such as is brought for the Korban Pesach. Makulos literally means helmeted. Later on in the Masechta, where it talks about how you roast the Korban Pesach, it describes you would take the cubo yuchrov, you have the kishkis of the animal, and you have the legs of the animal that were cut out during while the animal was being skinned and then cut apart when you were bringing the korban. So those, so you have one mandomer in the Mishnah that says you keep them inside the animal to roast it, and then Rabbi Akiva, I think, says, no, that would be like cooking them. So rather you put them outside it, so you have a spit, you have a piece of wood that you stick through the korban pesach from end to end to roast it, and then you take these other pieces, the kibbo yuchrov, and you put them on the spit next to the head. So therefore it resembles like a soldier who has like a helmet and weapons near his head. So therefore, makulas is the word kulsa is the Aramaic word for a helmet. So therefore, a goat roasted in that style is called a gdi makulas. So you're not allowed to have that on Pesach night unless it's an actual Korban Pesach, because then that would for sure look like kodesh machlis. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Yosi, Todos ish roimi hinig, that's b'nei roimi, lachol gdoim kolosim b'lo lepsachim. Todos, who was an important person in Roimi, the Pashtos Roimi means the city of Rome, although there are some people who argue that maybe there was a city of that name in Eretz Yisrael as well. Anyway, this Todos was an important person over there. What kind of importance did he have? We'll talk about soon in the Gemara. He created the minhag for the Jews in Roimi, that they should eat the gdi makulas like that on Pesach night as a zecher of the Korban Pesach. So either he lived after the Korban and he wants it to be a zecher, or these are Jews who are stuck in Rome and don't have to be oilel regel, as we learned at the beginning of the Masechta, that technically people from Chutzlod don't have to be oilel regel. Or maybe if we say that Roimi is an Eretz Yisrael, then for whatever reason they couldn't come. So at least this way they have a remembrance of it. Anyway, Sholcholoi, the Chachamim sent Todos a message. Il mole Todos ish roimi ata. If it weren't for the fact that you are Todos ish roimi, an important person, as we're going to see in the Gemara soon, what his importance was, gozranu alacha nidui. We would have declared nidui on you. Shatamachalas tisro kodshim bachutz, because you're causing the Jewish people to eat kodshim outside the Bismarck. Nobody was machdish this animal as a Korban Pesach. It's tantamount to making Jews eating Kodshim Machutz because it looks so similar to the Korban Pesach. People are going to think that you can't eat Kodshim Machutz, which is a serious aved, which is Chayiv Koris. So the question becomes, why is it that they taka didn't put him in Chayiv? Is it because he's a great person, he's a Talmud Chacham, and therefore it wouldn't be b'kavod dik to put him in Nidui? Or was he a man of fists, meaning he's a powerful kind of person, where the Chachamim were afraid to start up with him? If they put him in Nidui, then he could take his revenge on them or something. So Toshma, oidzu darash todes ishroimi. We can prove from the fact that it says in a Braisa, also, this Todos ish roimi darshin. So the fact that it says that he darshin means that he was a Talmud Chacham. So he explained, Ma ro Hanani Mishal Ba'azaria shemasru atzimah kedushas Hashem l'sech kivchen eish. What did Hanani Mishal Ba'azaria? What made them decide to go and throw themselves and then be ready to be thrown into the fire for Kiddush Hashem to be thrown into Nebuchadnezzar's furnace? So we know the story from Sefer Daniel. Nebuchadnezzar set up a gigantic statue over there, and he orders that everybody, all representatives from all the nations in his kingdom, should bow down to it. And Hanani, Mishael, Vazalia don't. So people go and master on them to Nebuchadnezzar, and Nebuchadnezzar calls them in and angrily tells them, you better do it or else you're going to be thrown into the furnace. And they say, nothing doing. We're not bound to no statues of yours. Throw us into the furnace. We don't care. The Eibishter is able to save us. And sure enough, he throws them in, and sure enough, the Eibishter does save them. The question is, what made them decide to do that? Now, what do you mean, what made them decide to do that? So Rashi explains that it means that they could have darshin when the pasuk says v'chai b'hem, you should live through mitzvahs. We darshin from that v'lo shayomus b'hem, that mitzvah shouldn't be something that a person dies because of. Because of that, we say that pikuach nefesh is doicha most mitzvahs in the Torah. Why didn't they think to apply it in this case as well? Now, the obvious question then becomes, what do you mean? I mean, the fact is that we know that you have the big three, that Yehorek Val Yavo, and one of them is Avodah Zarah. So Tosfos discusses it at some length, and Tosfos discusses it and says one possibility, and there are other Gemaras that bear this out as well, maybe the statue was not actually meant as Avodah Zarah. Avodah Zarah would be, in other words, that Nebuchadnezzar put it up to represent some other deity other than Hashem and demanding that everybody bow to him. Maybe what it was is actually he just put it up in his own honor. So then it would be similar to like you have statues all over the place of famous people in history. No, they don't put them up to worship them. They put them up to honor the person. So maybe the idea is the same way people see Nebuchadnezzar, people come for an audience to Nebuchadnezzar in person, they bow down in honor of his royal majesty. Maybe the same thing. Nebuchadnezzar is putting up the statue for the same purpose. In fact, some Mephoshim point out that a reason why Nebuchadnezzar would have had particular reason to do it then, just before that, this is in Daniel Peret Gimel. Just before that, in Perek Beis, you have the whole story where Nebuchadnezzar has this weird dream that then he forgets the dream and he doesn't know what it means either, and he's threatening to kill all his advisors unless they can tell him. And eventually Daniel comes and tells him the whole thing. And Akitsu, he sees this gigantic statue with a head of gold and a body of silver and so on and so forth. And Nebuchadnezzar, Daniel tells him that it represents the Arab Malchus, and eventually they're going to be knocked down and destroyed by Melech HaMashiach. Anyway, so the vote would be that now Nebuchadnezzar makes a statue entirely out of gold, meaning to represent with that, it shouldn't be that there's going to be only the head of gold and eventually my empire is going to fall and be taken over by Paras and Madai, who are represented by the silver and so forth. No, everybody in the whole world, everybody in the whole known world is going to come down and bow in front of my statue of gold, representing that my power and power of my descendants and my dynasty of Babel, which is compared to gold over there, will continue forever. So therefore, it's not necessarily Eved Zarah. And Tosfos proves it from certain expressions in the Psukim over there, and you also have a Lashon that the Gemara says in a couple of places that if they'd whipped Hanani, Mishael, Vazariah, they would have bowed to the statue. What do you mean? If it's Yehorek Bal Yaver, whipping or not, how could they do it? But if you say that it wasn't Eved Zarah, then there would have been a Heter. So therefore, so Tosfos says, that's one possibility, is what Todos is explaining over here. So what made them decide to go on Mesiras Nefesh, notwithstanding that point? Now, the Ran talks about it further, and says another possibility, Tosfos actually brings this possibility as well, that another meaning of Maro is why didn't they run away? And another possibility is why didn't they kill themselves? The same way, for example, you find that Shaul, when he's being pursued by the Plishtim, and he's afraid they're going to take him and torture him and force him to worship Avodah Zarah and who knows what else, so he fell on his sword. So why didn't Hanani, Mishael, Azariah do the same instead of having Nebuchadnezzar threaten them to that you better bow down or else I'm going to throw you into the fire? Then Marsha talks about it and says further, he says that after all, we can support what Rashi says, because in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, where it talks about this whole matter of Yehorek Val Yaver, there's the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel over there, who said, we actually talked about it briefly earlier in our Masechta as well, that the Rabbi Shmuel says that V'chai Barhem also applies to Avodah Zarah. He says, Gilei Arayis and Shvichas Damim not, because the psukim that we learned earlier that apply to that, but Avodah Zarah is V'chai Barhem just like any other mitzvah. So therefore, they could have followed Rabbi Shmuel's opinion, and they could have gotten out of it that way. Then Marsha says also that the vote is, it may not even have been Befahesia either. When is a person, again, in that same sugi over there, it talks about that when it's Befahesia, then you have to be Moisin Nefesh. But the answer is there may not have been Pahesia over there. Marsha says there may not have actually been 10 Jews there in Bikas Dura. It's after all, Bikas Dura is a valley in the middle of nowhere where Nebuchadnezzar set up the statue. So maybe there weren't enough Jews over there for it to be considered Pahesia. Which then now there's further discussion about that. Anaf Yosef points out, based on a different Gemara in Sanhedrin, it seems that there were many Jews over there. So then it would be for Hesia. He says, yeah, but since all those Jews did bow down to the statue, so they're now considered Mumrim Avodah Zarah. So therefore, they don't count towards the 10 that are needed for Hesia. Anyway, the point is, so Todos over here is saying this one line over here, Mauro, and you have all this discussion from Rishonim of what exactly he meant. Anyway, the point is, Nosu Kavachoyma Ba'atzman. The answer is, Todos said, Hanani, Mishael, Ba'azariah made a Kavachoyma for themselves. Mitzvardim. They used, on the basis of the frogs from Mitzrayim. Frogs are not commanded to sanctify Hashem's name, and yet Hashem says they'll come up into your houses, and into your bedroom, into your bed, and in your ovens, and in your kneading troughs, in your trays where you're kneading dough. So why does it mention Tanurecha and Misharesecha together? When do you find the kneading bowl near the oven? B'shasha Tanurcham. Dafka, when the oven is hot. So the point is, Hashem is not just telling Moshe to tell Paro that the frogs are going to go into the ovens when they're cold. Even when they're hot, they're going to be jumping into the ovens. And Marsha adds, even though frogs are cold-blooded creatures, they usually live in the water. The fire of an oven would be the last place they would normally go. But the Eibishter says that they're going to, and therefore they do, even though they don't have a mitzvah of doing such a thing. So therefore, so Hanani, Mishav Azariah said, Onush Mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem, Allah is Kama Kama, how much more so we who have a mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem. So therefore, we're not going to use any Haterim, we're not going to run away. And by the way, the Medrash tells that before, when this was all beginning to happen, they went to Yechezko on Navi to ask him what to do. And Yechezko tells them, you know, we learn from Yeshaya, we have a pasuk, Chovi Kimat Regad Yavar Zah. Hide away for a little while until the fury passes. So go hide. Go hide, and that way Nebuchadnezzar won't know where you are, and you'll get out of this whole thing. And they say, Adrabba, we're not going to. We're going to go publicly and make a Kiddush Hashem. And then Yechezkel says, go ahead. But, you know, the Ebishter is not necessarily, you know, you're not going to necessarily come out of it alive. In fact, he tells them, I have a nevuah. The Ebishter told me you're not going to. Then afterwards, the Ebishter tells him, no, I was telling you that in order that to test them, but I'm talking gonna stand up for them and save them. Anyway, the point is, they could have used any of these possibilities. They could have run away. They could have killed themselves. They could have used heterim of one kind or another. But nothing of the above. They learned that kavachomer from the frogs. So you see from that drasha that Todas Ishroimi was a great person. He was a Talmud Chacham, and therefore, when they said that if you weren't Todas Ishroimi, goes Ranu Alach Nidui, then we understand they didn't do that because he's a Talmud Chacham, and it wouldn't be bekavadik to put him in Nidui. As we talked about briefly earlier in the parak, the Gemara discusses in greater detail in Min Moed Katan that when a Talmud Chacham does something wrong, better they should give him Malkus rather than put him in Nidui. Okay. Rabbi Yossi bar Oven Omar. Rabbi Yossi bar Oven has a different explanation. What was so great about Todas Ishraimi? Why therefore the Chacham didn't want to store it up again? Matu Malai Lekis Tamid Chachamim Havel. Todas, he wasn't necessarily a Tamid Chacham, but what he used to do is he used to provide schora to Tamid Chachamim that they could earn a profit from it. So in other words, he would be like a venture capitalist. He would be providing the capital for Tamid Chachamim to be able to invest and earn some money, and therefore, so that way they could support themselves. A person does that, he supports Tamar Chachamim in a way like that, he will have the schus to sit in the Yeshiva Shamayla. As the Pasuk says, ki betzeil ha-chochma, betzeil ha-kosef, in the shadow of Chochma is the shadow of the money, meaning, in other words, the Chocham who has his shadow, he has his protection in Gan Eden. Marsha points out it's compared in the Psukim to a Sukkah. So, but Tzela Kosef, the one who provided him the money to be able to sit and learn, is also going to be able to enjoy the shade of that same Sukkah. So, because Todas was like that, then therefore the Chum didn't want to start up with him. They just warned him not to do this in the future. Okay. The Mishnah goes on to say, Mokum Shinagu Lahadlik Zaneir Belidi Yom Kippurim, in places where they have a minhag to light candles on Yom Kippur night, Madlikin, then they light them because that's a local minhag. Mokum Shinagu Shaloi Lahadlik Ein Madlikin, and in places where the minhag is not to, then they don't. The reason for the two minhagim is the idea is both of them want it. We know that on Yom Kippur, Tashmish Amita is Osir. So one, we talked about this the other day, because for some reason, the Agadis here in this Perek of Ein Yaakov are a little out of order compared to how they are in the Gemara. The ones who said you don't light took the view that this way, the husband and wife won't see each other. And if they don't see each other, they're less likely to be attracted to one another and to want to engage in Tashmish. The ones who said you should light figured, Adrabba, we know you're not allowed to have relations in a room where there's a candle or a light burning. So therefore, Adrabba, keep candles burning on Yom Kippur night, and that way they won't be able to have Tashmish. So the Mishnah continues, Umadlikin Bebotik Nesias, either way, you light on Yom Kippur night in shuls. This is where we have the minhag, by the way, that on Yom Kippur, particularly everybody brings all their Yotzet candles to shul. Over Bate Medrashis, and also in the Bate Medrash, over Mavoyas HaFelim, also in dark alleyways, so people don't trip over there, Val Gabi HaCholim, and where there are sick people, because the doctor or whoever's taking care of them needs to be able to see what he's doing to be able to help them. So those, you don't have, there, there's no difference in Menhagim, they're universally you light candles for that purpose. So the Gemara says, Tana, Ben Shomer Lahadlik, or Ben Shomer Shloi Lahadlik, either way, whether the places where they had the minhag to light candles Yom Kippur night, and the places they had the minhag not to. Either way, Shneim, Ladovah, Echad, Eskavnu, they both have the same intention to prevent Tashmish Amita. So Amar Rav Yeshua, Dor HaShurava, Va'amech Kulam Tzadikim Lo'olam Yushu Aretz V'Gomer. The Pasuk says about the Jewish people, your nation are all Tzadikim, they will forever inherit the land, which that means the land particularly means Olam Haba. So then this is where we learn, Kor Yisrael, Lashem L'chayuk Elam Haba. Bein Sh'omer L'Havdik, Bein Sh'omer Sh'lo L'Havdik, Shneim L'Niskamnu Elul Dabar Echad. This is an example where even though you have polar opposite Minhagim, and you would say, how is it possible? It seems that some of them are doing the right thing, and some of them are doing the wrong thing. But no, the fact is both of them are doing it for the sake of the mitzvah. Which Marsha, in other words, adds further, even though you could argue each one could end up being counterproductive, each one could lead to the opposite result. It could be you don't have candles, and therefore people go and then do Tashmish HaMitzvah because they figure they have the opportunity. You could daft the light candles, and then they see each other. So it could end up being counterproductive, but Amech Kulam Tzadikim, that each one meant the Toiva, even though conceivably it might, boomerang on. So the Gemara continues, Amar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Ein Mevorchen Ala Ur, Ela B'Metzori Shabbos. You make a bracha on fire only on Metzori Shabbos, Hoy L'Tchilas B'Ri Yosehu, because that's when fire was first created. Because, as the Gemara talks about later, that's when Adam Rishon first discovered fire. Hashem gave him, it was dark over there on the first Matzah Shabbos of the world, and Hashem gave him the understanding to strike two stones together, and he had a spark came out, and that's how fire was invented. So Omalei Hahu Sava, the Itema Rav Babachana, so a certain old Tamil Chacham, or could be Eliyahu Navi, or some say Rav Babachana, said to Rav Yehuda, Yishar Yashikoyach B'chein Omer Rav Yechanan, and so Rav Yechanan said. That this is how it is. You make it only on Matzori Shabbos. Then here actually is where we have the piece that we learned a few days ago, where Rabbi Baba Chana corrected that and said it's not that actually that Rabbi Yechanan said you don't make the bracha only on Matzori Shabbos. The fact is you also make it on Matzori Yom Kippur, but rather a different din that Rabbi Yechanan had said that when Yom Kippur comes out on Shabbos, then you light candles regardless because covered Shabbos. The fact is, lahalacha, we make the bracha on fire both on Matzori Shabbos and on Matzori Yom Kippur, with the difference being that on Matzah Shabbos, we're commemorating the creation of fire. And since Adam, to begin with, created fire over there by striking the two stones together, therefore we can also create fire for the purpose. We can strike a match. As opposed to Matzah Yom Kippur, we're commemorating the fact that we couldn't use fire over Yom Kippur, and now we're allowed to again, which is why we need a Ner Shabbos. That's why we need a candle that remained, or a candle lit from a candle, whatever, that remained burning the entire Yom Kippur, because it has to be. In other words, it's like now we're starting over, now, so to speak, we're continuing where we left off before Yom Kippur with the use of fire, and therefore we need a fire that's continuing from before Yom Kippur. So the Gemara asks, Uber Matzori Shabbos Ivri. So you're telling me fire was created on Matzori Shabbos? V'hatanya, we learn in a Braisa. Asara Dvorim Nivru Be'erev Shabbos Bein Hashmoshes. 10 things were created on Erev Shabbos Bein Hashmoshes. Now in Pirkei Avos, you have a list of 10 things as well. But the list that we're going to have over here is not exactly the same list. It has some of the things in common, but then there are some of the things that are different. Some of the things that are there and not here, and vice versa. The idea being that they're all things that involve a shinui ateva. They're all something where nature is being altered. And since ein kochodesh tachas hashemesh, so therefore the potential for all these things had to be created erev Shabbos bein hashmoshes. And that's why dafka erev Shabbos bein hashmoshes, because it's like the turning point between the weekdays and Shabbos, and therefore these are all things that are like the transition between the regular mundane world that goes up Piderach HaTeva versus the world of Nisim, which is associated with Shabbos, and therefore they have to be created Erev Shabbos Ben HaShemoshes. Elohein, Be'er, the well, the Be'er Shel Miriam that the Jewish people had in the desert. Mon, the Keshes, the rainbow. Ksav, then you have the writing. Michtav, and the ksav is the lettering, michtav is the writing. So there's a few different explanations what ksav versus michtav means. Rashi says ksav means the names of the letters, the names of the alphabets. Michtav would be the actual shapes of them. Then Rashi gives another explanation. Ksav would mean the shapes of the letters, how it's in particular how the letters that are engraved in the luchos, which we know had nisim happen with them, mem v'samach shebeluchos v'neso emnim, the middle of the letters stayed in place and didn't fall out. And then michtav would actually be not michtav, but machtev, the instrument used to write it, which would be, in other words, the instrument that Hashem used, so to speak, to carve out the letters on the luchos. So there's that, and there's a number of other different explanations of what ksav versus mikhtav is. If we're saying that it means, like Rashi's first explanation, that ksav means the names of the letters and mikhtav means the shapes of them, what's l'mayla b'derech hateva? Well, the fact is, the letters of the alephbeis are given milamayla, as opposed to every other alphabet in the world was invented by human beings. So therefore, there's something special about the alephbeis that it had to be created out of Shabbos bein hashemashos. The luchos, then you have the luchos themselves. The kibre shom Moshe Rabbeinu's kever, where the lo yad esh es kibrase, nobody knows where he's buried. So it means, in other words, it's like a place that's higher than Teva. Ora shomad ba Moshe v'Eliyahu. Another one is the cave where Moshe and Eliyahu stood. So Moshe, where Hashem tells him, "Samticha b'nikras atzur, I'll place you in the cleft of the rock, and I'll show you, and I'll show you v'reisa esachorei." And later on, Eliyahu goes and stands in the same cave, and Hashem tells him, "Malach apoy Eliyahu." And then Hashem shows him loy barash Hashem, loy baruach Hashem, etc. Killed mamadaka, that whole thing. So that's another thing. Upsichas pia osim, also that Bilam's donkey would be able to open its mouth and talk. Upsichas pia oritz loyas rishoyim, and the opening of the mouth of the earth to swallow up the rishoyim, to swallow up adas korach. So that's the list. Reb Nechemiah omer b'shum aviv afa ur v'apered. Reb Nechemiah says in the name of his father, also fire and the mule. So here we have the question that we're saying fire was first created, Matzah Shabbos, by other Mirishan, but here we see Hashem created it on Erev Shabbos ben Hashemoshes. Reb Yoshi omer b'shum aviv afa ayil, also the ram that Avraham brought as a korban instead of Yitzchak, and the shomer that they used to carve the stones of the Beis Hamikdash and the stones of the Choshen. Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yehuda says also the first pair of tongs, because you need to make a pair of tongs. You need a previous pair of tongs because you need to pull. You need to put the original. You need to put the metal in the fire and heat it up and then pull it out. So you need tongs to do that. But sabsa kamaisa man abda, who made the first pair of tongs? Oh, loye. So of necessity, bria b'de shemayimi must have been created min hashemayim. Omrulai, so the other Chacham said, that's not a proof. You can make a pair of tongs in a mold. You pour hot metal into a mold, you let it solidify over there, and then you have ready-made, you have a pair of tongs, you don't need to make it in the fire and pull it out. But there's a sicha, by the way, that ever talks about that Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, to tackle what's the Inyan that we're, or what's the Mila de Chassidus saying it, and Chlal, why do we need the list? Why does he say, why is the expression af tzvas, tzvas asuya? Why not say af tzvas, like he says over here? The gist of it is that Rebbe explains that when the Yesh Omim say over there, af mazikin, af tzvas, tzvas asuya, the idea is both the mazikin and the tzvas, according to this mandomer, they're not there for themselves. They're there for you to use them, or to use them in your avoda in the appropriate way. The mazikin is your mevatel them, and you overcome what they're trying to do. And the tzvas is only to make another tzvas, meaning the idea of hechsher mitzvah, the idea of not just the mitzvah itself, but the preparing the prerequisites for the mitzvah, which are very important as well. Anyway, the point is, katani miyad Reb Nechemiah ima afaur. So Reb Nechemiah is saying fire was created on Erev Shabbos ben Hashemoshes. The answer is like Kasha, Hobo Urdi Dan, Hobo Urdi Gehenim. Our fire, our regular kind of fire, was created Matzah Shabbos. The fire of Gehenim, Urdi Dan Matzah Shabbos, Urdi Gehenim, Erev Shabbos, that one was created on Erev Shabbos, which the Gemara will continue discussing, and we'll learn that tomorrow, Best Hashem, that it seems that that one was also created Urdi. So all of these things, all of these things that had to be created b'koyach in order that they can be l'mayla m'ateva later on when the world needs them, were created during this time Erev Shabbos ben Hashemoshes. Yom Yom Mashiach v'Ola, Chatei Elul. The goal and the job, the special job of our dur is to bring Mashiach Tekev from Yad. As we say, we want Mashiach now. There's no chiddush in it. Every year, after all, is davening in Shemoneh Esrei. Tzemach David Amdecha Meheira Satzmiach Ki V'Shuascha Kivinu Kol Hayom. So it means we're actually saying three times a day in Shemoneh Esrei that we were waiting for Hashem's Yeshua all day long. So therefore, when Mincha comes and Mashiach hasn't come, then we say it again. And if the Geula is Chas V'Shalom delayed till Ma'ariv, then we say it again at Ma'ariv. continuing on halachas of Seder Halayla, before a person goes to sleep, a Yorah Shemayim should check over what he did, make a cheshbon ha-nefesh of what he did all day. If he finds he did an Aveira, then he should do tshuva for it and take on himself not to do it anymore, especially you have the more common Averas like Chanifa, flattering people who did something wrong, and lying, and Latsonis, and Lashon Hara. A person has to look into those very carefully. Also to be moichel anybody who sinned against him. Nobody else should be punished because of him. That's the Ribbono Shel Olam that we say before Kriyash Meshalamita, as the Gemara says that person that because of him somebody else was punished by Hashem, then that person himself doesn't get to go into Mechitzasei Shalach HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So you should say three times, I forgive everybody who was Mitzayir him, and then say the Ribbono Shel Olam that we say in the city. The Zoya, by the way, has a story that this Tvila is based on. Actually, there was a Yid where one time Rabbi Abba sees a Yid sleeping outside the city of Lud, where he sees a snake is about to bite him, and all of a sudden a branch falls on the snake and kills it. And then he sees the guy is on a very shaky rock, and the rock is about to tumble off the cliff. And although the guy gets up, and only then does the rock fall off. So Rabbi Abba goes and asks the guy, "What's your special schusim that they able to save you twice?" He tells him, "I'm moichel everybody every night before I go to sleep." So it's based on this tefillah is based on that.